Welcome to Brain Junk. I'm Trace Kerr.
And I'm Amy Barton. Dust off your soccer trophies and iron that rodeo queen sash. You might not have won the spelling bee, but there's still hope. Today we'll be talking about everything you never knew you wanted to know about unexpected awards you didn't know you could win.
We're going to start off talking about the Ig Nobel Prize. So pretty much everybody knows about the Nobel Prize mm-hmm. that you can win for science or literature or mathematics, all these different things. Well, the Ig Nobel is a parody of the Nobel Prize, celebrating improbable research that makes people laugh and then think.
Awesome.
Exactly. It was organized by the scientific humor magazine Annals of Improbable Research, and Ig Nobel Prizes were created in 1991 to honor achievements in the unusual and honor the imaginative in science, medicine, and technology. And every year in Harvard's Sanders Theater, the Ig Nobel winners are there. And it's a big show. They tell lots of puns.
Yeah.
And perfect. Each winner gets handed their award by a genuine Nobel laureate.
That's so good.
They said on the website, a bemused genuine Nobel laureate.
Those Nobel laureates probably haven't had a lot of fun during their research time. So
yes.
This is probably wonderful.
Well, and all of these Ig Nobels are given to people who have actually done real research.
True scientists.
Yes, they're true scientists. They're true mathematicians. There are real research papers that were done. And often, even though it makes you laugh because it seems kind of silly, they are doing still very important research. And part of the Ig Nobel, it's a play on the word ignoble, which is an achievement characterized by baseness, which these things are not. It's mostly a satirical social criticism of how we decide what good, I'm air quoting, what good science is.
Mm-hmm.
Because even if it's not something, you know, if it sounds like something silly. Okay, so here's an example. There was a woman who won an Ig Nobel because she had a bra. She had designed the cups so that you could remove them from the bra and use them as face masks. Like if you were in a chemical warfare situation and these would protect you. So initially you laughed, right?
Yeah.
You laugh because you're like, a bra into a face mask. And they had pictures of them and it's like, wow, that looks kind of silly. But in an emergency,
you'd survive.
You would survive, or you would at least not have gas in your face or this kind of thing. So these are important research that is being done.
Please tell me that you have a flatulence or fecal-related award.
I don't.
But well, I'll try to find one for you guys in the show notes.
I do have some examples. The 28th awards ceremony is September 13th, 2018. So if you want to go, you still have time at Harvard. Yes. Each year there are 10 winners from 9,000 nominated entries. And here's a little funny bit. So people who are potential winners are given a chance to turn down the prize. So they figure out, okay, these people are going to win. Then they call you up privately and they say, hey, you're going to win this. Would you be willing to come up and receive this? Because we're not making fun of you, but you know, it's...
It will be silly. There will be some...
Yeah. And
they said... very nice of them, actually.
And pretty much nobody says no. In 2017, for physics, Marc-Antoine Fardin, he got one for using fluid dynamics to probe the question, can a cat be both a solid and a liquid?
I really hope the answer is yes.
Well, yes, because a liquid is traditionally defined as a material that adapts its shape to fit a container. So under certain conditions, if you think about a cat curled up in a sink or a cat who's like in a box, cats seem to fit the definition.
Yes.
So what he was talking about was redefining what we call a liquid. Mm-hmm. And he was using this cat thing. It's kind of preposterous. And yet, if you go by the definition that we have, sometimes cats are liquids.
Oh, that's very interesting, actually.
See?
And super fun.
It is super fun. In 2016, for biology, it was awarded jointly to Charles Foster and Thomas Thwaites. So Charles Foster is a biologist. He goes deep diving into trying to emulate the way the animals act because
that's
part of
so
the
method.
Yes, well, because part of the problem when you are observing an animal is you're disturbing its environment. And so the thought is you're not actually getting pristine data because you just being there observing them might change their behavior.
Cuz you're eating a Clif Bar
or you smell funny or you know this kind of thing. So what Thomas Thwaite did was created prosthetic extensions for his limbs to help him move in the manner of those animals.
Wow.
So what he's most known for is they made him a getup so that he could live with goats in the wild. There are prosthetics for his arms and his legs, so he's hunched over and he can climb and walk and he looks very goat-like.
Does he have a furry suit? Is he going commando?
You know, I didn't see a furry suit, but he must have had a furry suit because
visually.
Yes, visually he'd be bent over, but he wouldn't look very goat-like. They showed several prototypes of his equipment. And he did it for several days, and it did not look comfortable because his hands are jammed into what would be the kneecap of the front legs, and then he's rigged up on this thing. But so, okay, it might seem kind of silly, but here's a scientist with serious commitment to getting real data. I mean, they've been doing Ig Nobels since 1991, and 10 winners every year. There is a lot of information there. And many different podcasts, Radiolab, I believe, and a few others have talked about the Ig Nobel. One of them, they were talking about a scientist who was doing fertility studies, and he was putting pants on rats to see if the heat of different kinds of fabrics influenced their fertility.
Well, and that babies can be made as a result of that kind of research. New people.
Yeah, so you'd know, because you can't say to a guy, hey, wear these polyester pants and see if that affects things for you. But they were doing it for rats. And yeah, so go check them out.
I'm going to need a moment because I'm envisioning rats in pants. I'm going to tell you about the Stella Awards, which were inspired by the woman in 1992 who bought a McDonald's coffee and spilled it on herself and was awarded $2.9 million by a jury due to that injury. And so the Stella Award is for spurious, wild, outrageous, ridiculous lawsuits. So one of my favorites is for a gentleman who was imprisoned in Utah. His name is Robert Paul Rice, and he had multiple felonies. He claimed that the Utah Department of Corrections was not letting him practice his religion, which is Druidic vampire. So he claimed that the prison wasn't supplying his vampiric dietary needs, and so he sued. His suit was thrown out of court, happily.
He should have been what are the spaghettarians or something? It's the people that wear the strainer on their head.
Oh, yeah. He was registered as Catholic, which didn't help his suits.
Oh.
Another excellent one is a gentleman named Sean Perkins in Indiana in 2003, who was hit by lightning in the parking lot of Paramount's King Island Amusement Park, and he sued because he stated that the amusement park should have warned people not to be standing outside during a thunderstorm.
Okay. See, this is what I don't, you know, this is what gives America such a bad name.
It does. Yes. This next one is really what does. There was a woman who was in her storage unit, and someone came through and was doing nightly checks and shut the door to her
storage unit,
which was ajar. She didn't make any noise. She didn't shout. She didn't bang. So whatever she was doing in there, she did not hear the door close. She was in there for 63 days and barely survived, and was originally about 150 pounds, made it down to 83 pounds, and was finally freed. But the court was really asking, why didn't you just make some noise when they shut the door? So they were a little concerned about the dubious circumstances.
How big? I know, because I've had storage facilities, you know, and usually they're not very big, maybe 10 feet long and maybe 10 feet wide. And somebody closing the door, you would notice. And then why you weren't banging on the door constantly, you know.
The jury found that she was pretty close to 100% responsible for her own predicament. She had sued for $10 million. They still awarded her $100,000, even though they said, this was your fault. Oh my gosh, really? That one kills me.
Well, maybe because they were saying, hey, maybe they weren't doing good enough surveillance on the place.
Yeah.
Wow.
My final most favorite. These are, I've probably said every time, this one's my favorite. this one's my favorite.
No, this one. This is my favorite.
This is it. Christopher Roller sued David Blaine and David Copperfield because he was mystified by their professional magic. He sued both of them for 10% of their income, which he estimated at $50 million for Copperfield and $2 million for David Blaine at the time of this suit, which was in 05. And his basis for the suit was that magicians defy the laws of physics and therefore must be using godly powers. And since Roller is God, according to him, they're somehow stealing the power from him.
I think he maybe just needed someone to help him with some mental illness issues.
Potentially.
Well, we're going to go in a completely different direction and talk about the Comedy Wildlife Photography Awards.
Now, I'm excited for this.
This is very visual, which is unfortunate because this is a podcast. But I had to talk about it anyway because the whole basis behind this one, it's about wildlife conservation and creating more avenues for conversation. Ooh, conservation and conversation. That's tough.
Ooh, I like that.
It's about wildlife conservation and creating more avenues for conversation about protecting our world's wild creatures. So that being said, every single year they have a competition where people can send in photographs of wildlife. So imagine you've got somebody who is on the Serengeti and they're taking pictures of the cheetah running very majestically, and then he trips and you get that on film as he crashes and burns.
Oh, yeah.
They're over here, Amy, you need to take a look. So you've got these owlets and the three of them. I mean, it looks great because there's the sunset behind them, and then you see this little owl and he's lost traction and he's trying to stay on, and then in the end he's hanging upside down and the other two owls are kind of like, dude, you're really making us look bad.
It's like that Pixar short. If you've ever watched any of the Pixar shorts,
the birds.
Oh, so good.
Yes. There's ones of, there's an otter and he's stretching, but it looks like he's out in the water going, yay!
If you're from Spokane, there's a picture of some bears.
And they're getting their bear on.
They did. Yes. It made it to a billboard in the Spokane area.
2016, there's one of a fox. You know, if you've ever seen foxes in the snow, they boink up in the air and then they go face down to get the mouse. Well, this photograph has caught fox just as his head went into the snow. And it looks like he just did a high dive into a snowbank. They're great. So I will have links to this on our website because it's hilarious.
You can narrate them in your head with the voice of Morgan Freeman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and last one, there's a grizzly bear doing that thing. You know, they've got the classic shot of him standing at the edge of a waterfall and he's trying to catch salmon. And the salmon has come out of nowhere and whoosh, right up the side of his face. It's very embarrassing. So go take a look. They've got pictures from every year. It's
a bunny with some kind of green mustache.
Yep, because he's got a bunch of grass. The 2018 competition is now closed, but you know, maybe what you need to do is start thinking about doing some wildlife photography. It can't be your dog. It can't be your cat. It's got to be wildlife. Maybe a deer tripping in your backyard. And then you can submit to that. Yep. I spent a good half an hour not working on research and looking at photographs.
Giggling.
I really did.
They're wonderful. You really should go check them out.
Okay, so something that's a little more tangible. The Bent Spoon Awards.
I'm not sure how tangible this one is.
Oh,
this is an Australian one. And the description is, the Bent Spoon Award is presented annually to the perpetrator of the most preposterous piece of paranormal or pseudoscientific piffle. That's a really wonderful sentence.
Wow, that is a lot of alliteration.
Mm-hmm. So the Australians have said, please do not nominate people who do their woo outside of Australia. The Bent Spoon is for local heroes only. So a few examples. In 2007, Marina Manzoufas, head of programming at the ABC for her sterling work. Like how it says the ABC. It's like your grandma wrote this. For her sterling work in authorizing the television show Psychic Investigators, made worse by putting it to air in the Catalyst time slot. Can't even. Clearly, whoever nominates these awards liked Catalyst and is peeved that this spurious television show about psychic investigators was put.
Catalyst was a show. I was thinking,
I'm guessing so, yeah.
Catalyst time slot. And I was thinking, is that like the 8 o'clock hour? Is that like...
Maybe, I don't know.
So they put in the psychic television show over their favorite
Marina
show.
Marina Mandzoufas. She's the head of programming. She's on their naughty list because clearly whoever nominates these awards likes Catalyst and not Psychic Investigators.
There's a bit of anger there.
There
like,
is.
Like, these are kind of snarky awards.
Yes. 2008 is the perfect example. All it says in the 2008 award, and remember, these are for pseudoscience and paranormal research kind of things. 2008 says, Professor Karen Phelps. That's it.
That's
enough.
It?
That's it. It's just everything about her offends the Bent Spoon Award nominating committee. Everything. I'm sorry, Professor Phelps.
Oh, my God.
I didn't Google her because I just want that mystery to live on.
Oh, poor thing.
Poor Karen. Maybe she got lots of new clients or something, or I don't know. She's a mystery. 1990's award was for Mafu, who is the multi-lifed entity channeled by Penny Torres Rubin, and who, despite millennia of experience, was remarkable for the banality of his or her pronouncements.
That's also a really nice way of saying you're full of it,
mm-hmm.
and you're really old, but yet you have no wisdom.
I love you, Australians.
I know, right?
You make me super happy. At least the Bent Spoon Australians. The rest of you, I'm not sure, but the Bent Spoon people are.
Oh, no, I'm sure.
Terrific.
I mean, you have mammals that lay eggs, and you have the Bent Spoon Awards. I think we need to go.
Yeah, we're looking for host families. My next favorite, among all my favorites, is the Diagram Awards. And these come out of, I'm sure they were guys at this book convention in a bar. And they're like, some of these titles are ridiculous. We should nominate award for weirdest title. And so this award came in 1978 at the Frankfurt Book Fair. It was proposed by Trevor Bonford of the Diagram Group, and it is celebrating the book with the oddest title.
Hit me with some titles.
1978, the inaugural year. Proceedings of the Second International Workshop on Nude Mice.
Nude?
Presumably all mice are nude, except for like...
They're not. They're wearing fur. Gah.
Some of them might be wearing experimental pants.
They could be, and then they would not be naked.
Yeah. 1985, Natural Bust Enlargement with Total Power. How to increase the other 90% of your mind to increase the size of your breasts.
I don't know if I can include that one.
It's completely normal anatomical terms. Be cool. 1992, How to Avoid Huge Ships.
That's important.
1994, Highlights in the History of Concrete.
Wow. I'm feeling tired just thinking about that. Except there's a surprisingly awesome podcast episode where they talk all about concrete, and it is surprisingly awesome. So maybe not as boring as the title sounds.
Maybe. 2002, Living with Crazy Buttocks.
Enough said.
Here's one for my dentist. This one's for you, Dr. Jones. Managing a Dental Practice. The Genghis Khan way. I don't think Dr. Steve is managing the Genghis Khan way. He's super nice and all of his office staff is
too. So where are they going with that?
Their billing practices are very aggressive.
They're very, yes. You want that tooth to stay in? You're going to pay your bill.
You use 3 spit cups, $5 each.
What?
Mm-hmm.
And a horse. I'd like a horse.
Yeah. These awards were so delightful to the industry folks that they spawned the Bulwer-Lytton Fiction Contest. And that is a tongue-in-cheek contest that's held annually by the English Department of San Jose University. So good on you, Californians, too. And it is for the opening sentence of the worst of all possible novels that is deliberately bad.
Okay. So, like, it was a dark and stormy night. That is your classic.
That is exactly the sentence from whence this came. And so, this opening from the 1830 novel, Paul Clifford, and it continues, now begins a dramatic recitation by Amy Barton. It was a dark and stormy night. The rain fell in torrents, except at occasional intervals, when it was checked by a violent gust of wind which swept up the streets. For it is London that our scene lies, rattling along the housetops and fiercely agitating the scanty flame of the lamps that struggled against the darkness. So that's the spurious sentence.
That is a really long sentence.
It's really descriptive of, it was rainy and stormy.
Except at times.
So the Diagram Award spawned this Bulwer Lytton contest, and the Little Lytton contest is then for the shortest version of the worst sentence. And so, for example, 2001, turning, I mentally digested all of what you, the reader, are about to find out heartbreakingly.
Oh, so, that's really bad.
Short, terrible sentences. That's my awards. They're good. They're bad and so good.
They are bad and so good. More bad but so good awards. We're just going to hit on very quickly. I was thinking about the high school most likely to awards.
Oh, yeah.
So here in the United States, high school is done. We've got a yearbook every year, and it's got pictures of everybody, so you can look back in 20 years and go, why did I choose to wear that sweater?
Yep.
But one of the things we like to do to the high school seniors on their way out is highlight 20 or 30 of them with
most
things
likely
like
to succeed.
Most likely to succeed, or most likely to go to space, or most likely to win an Oscar. But there are some weird ones. I was looking through my high school yearbook, and there was, well, most changed isn't so bad, but there was sidewalk driving. And looking at the picture, I remember that these two were really bad drivers. There's also craziest laugh.
Yeah.
The biggest BSers. And this one, I'm like, the cutest caboose.
Oh, I don't think that that would be in a modern yearbook.
No. And another one was best legs. But what was funny about the cutest caboose was that she had on a sweater that covered her butt. It was almost like she decided to defy them.
That's
You know what? You've also made it to the end of this episode. An award for all of you brain junkies.
Yay!
So please come visit us at brainjunkpodcast.com. We might not have an award for you, but we will have pictures and show notes about all these different awards. Oh, well, definitely we'll have pictures. You've got to go look at the wildlife pictures.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And for this and other wonderful episodes, look for Brain Junk wherever you find your podcasts. And while you're there, don't forget to like and please subscribe.
Yes. We tweet at MyBrainJunk, and you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at BrainJunkPodcast. Trace and I will catch you next time when we share more of everything you never knew you wanted to know, and I guarantee you will not be bored.